Greetings, folks, and welcome to Mac Geek Gab number 45. I'm Dave Hamilton, of course, here with John Braun. How are you, John? Are you with me?
Fantastic. I'm with you, man.
Yeah, I am, as I indicated last week, I'm traveling.
Where are you at?
I'm in Austin at the moment, Austin, Texas, and you're at home, but there's something crummy about the hotel bandwidth here, and we all get to enjoy it because John sounds like he's in the middle of a flanger.
It's a nice effect when you want it.
But... it's a nice effect. Yeah, just consider it an effect. Now you'll have no trouble telling me from John. So we were going to talk about the MacBook Pro this evening, but with my traveling and stuff, I actually started thinking, you know, it'd be great to actually to talk about that after I had traveled with it for a week. Of course, I've been using it at my desk. So we are going to sort of put that off until next week. We've got a ton of listener feedback. I got it right. Listener feedback that came in, and quite a few other little things. I'm not sure how long this show will go. We will we'll see how the bandwidth holds up here. We are recording this though on the MacBook Pro, and right now are using Gizmo Project. We tried Skype, and they both sounded equally as crummy. So it's just the hotel bandwidth. You doing all right, John? You're going to Boston tomorrow, aren't you?
Yes, sir. Going to do the Acela thing, the train thing. No driving.
No driving.
And if you've been to Boston, driving in Boston is not fun.
I drove in Boston last night. I feel like I've been traveling for 24 hours. I drove into Boston, picked up a friend at the airport, had dinner in Boston, slept near the airport, then got on the plane this morning. It's been crazy. So let's get to the show. And we have a couple of questions here. The first will be from Joe, and I just need to navigate here.
Hello, chaps. It's Joel from the southeast of England here. I've got a quick question for you, rather a newbie question that might be too simple for your podcast, but one that I hope you can help with. I'm a very happy Windows switcher, but there's one thing that I simply can't answer. I've been using computers since before the days of mice, so I'm a big fan of keyboard shortcuts. I find them much quicker and more productive. But I find that in some ways, the keyboard shortcuts on the Mac aren't as comprehensive. For example, getting to the menu bar and choosing different options in Word, or particularly trying to work out how to tab between different things in the message window in something like Photoshop. I want to be able to tab between save, don't save, and cancel, and yet I can't work out what combination of key pushes will allow me to actually move between those different boxes. And I can't find the answer anywhere. Hopefully it's something you can help with, because it's getting rather frustrating. I love the show. It's quite a little geek for me, and I really enjoy the video cast that you guys did a couple of months ago. You look nothing like what I expected. Far more handsome, I'm sure. So
he's sure. Yeah, I'm not sure what that means. As far as the keyboard shortcuts,
we've gotten better looking actually since that. But
yeah, I believe that. I believe that I have. So you got any thoughts for him, John?
Oh, I got a big one.
Which is
a big thought here, and in general, I would agree with our colleague there that in general the Mac kind of sucks for keyboard shortcuts.
Yep.
Almost every window, and I got a tip of the hat to Windows. For the most part, Windows really gives you for almost everything. I don't know, what do we call them? Accelerators, I think they call it, or keyboard shortcuts, whatever the heck it is. But Windows applications seem to be much more keyboard friendly.
Yeah.
Like almost every function in a menu has a keyboard shortcut. The Mac apps tend not to, but they gotten better. And I'm not sure when this showed up, but if you go to System Preferences,
right,
Keyboard and Mouse, and then there's a tab, Keyboard Shortcuts.
Yep.
Now it has a bunch, and you're probably going to mention this as well, but keyboard shortcuts is a whole bunch of built-in ones, which is another thing, because before it was kind of like you had to be part of a secret society to know the secret shortcuts to do certain cool things in on the Mac.
Right.
And that's still the case, especially with a lot of the startup things, but at least in the case of applications, if you go to keyboard shortcuts, you can add your own.
That's right, yeah.
You'll notice a whole bunch of them, and if you look on that preference pane, you will then, system preference selection, keyboard shortcuts, you will see a plus in the kind of the lower left-hand corner. If you click on plus, it'll say, which application would you like to define a keyboard shortcut for? And if you click on the application menu, it'll show you all the applications for which it thinks it can do that for.
That's right.
I'm not quite sure, and maybe you could expand on that. how exactly applications advertise that. But then I also noticed if you pull all the way down to the end, there's an other. But I haven't done extensive work with this, but I would suspect that this would be the first place to look to do this sort of thing.
Yeah, based on my experience there, what that does is it allows you to assign keyboard shortcuts to menu commands, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, right? Isn't that what it's doing there?
Mm-hmm.
But it won't let you assign keyboard shortcuts to things that don't appear in the menu. As far as what Joe was asking about, what I would do is try holding down the command key and hitting the first letter of whatever option you want to choose in the dialog box that's up. More often than not, you'll find that the application's developer has put a shortcut in that may or may not be apparent. Sometimes you'll hold down the command key and it'll actually appear in the dialog box, and sometimes it won't, but it'll work anyway. Command N will say no very often. Command period will almost always choose the cancel option, even if it's not evident in the window there. And then, of course, you can use the whole universal access thing in the system preferences to really navigate the Mac without a mouse at all. But that's not for the faint at heart. But it certainly works. There are a slew of default keyboard shortcuts, and there's a knowledge base article at Apple at the site. We'll put a link to that in the show notes, because there are some that are helpful. Yeah.
Now I haven't looked at it for a while, and it's probably in my massive stack of, you know, software that I'm gonna plan to look at someday.
Yeah.
Just like you have to.
Oh yeah.
Quick keys. Whatever happened with that? I remember that was application that would enter this arena. Now I know they have. Though I haven't looked at the OS X version for a while, so it may in fact be in a stack somewhere here.
Yep.
But I do believe they do make a version of Quick Keys, which does something a little different. I think it's more keyboard macros, but it may delve into this area as well. So I think between what's built in OS X and what Dave mentioned, I think that will provide a number of places to look that will hopefully satisfy our trusty listener there.
Yeah, and in addition to Quick Keys, there's a piece of software that I've wound up using over the years called Keyboard Maestro, which basically does kind of sort of the same thing. So there you go.
Hi, guys. This is Brian Giesa. I live in the Cleveland, Ohio area, and I like the podcast a lot. Got a question for you. You guys, I believe, both use .Mac.
Indeed.
And I was wondering if there's any way to FTP files to your iDisk rather than using just the Finder. It seems the sync process is very slow, especially if you've made a lot of changes to your iDisk. And I've done a little digging around myself and can't seem to find an easier way or a more efficient way to move files back and forth from my iDisk on my desktop and actually syncing them with the .Mac server. Thanks a lot. We'll
stop before he tells us his email address, because you frankly don't need to know it.
Unless you want to send him spam, but we'll get to that later.
Yeah, we'll get to that later. Got any thoughts for him, John?
One of my thoughts, I'm not aware of a direct FTP connection.
I don't believe
it
exists, yeah.
But you can get, what is it?
Transmit. Yeah. I'll jump to the answer for you. I think transmit.
I was going to say WebDAV.
Well, it is. .Mac runs a WebDAV server, that WEBDAV. And that's the protocol that it uses to allow you to mount it on the Finder and all that. I believe that's the only way you can communicate with it. But Transmit, a third-party FTP utility, will communicate with .Mac, presumably just using WebDAV. So I don't know that it's going to be any faster, but it's possible that it's going to be faster than the Finder. Who knows how Apple has written that. So.
Yeah, and there's actually a utility. So WebDAV, as far as I can tell, is a way to it gives you file transfer capabilities, but it does it through HTTP. I think it tunnels it through HTTP.
Right.
So you could actually, and Apple does have a Windows utility, and I believe actually a Mac utility as well, that will ease will make it a little easier for you to mount a WebDAV volume, such as your .Mac.
Right.
Storage space. But yeah, they have a Windows utility. I have used that, so that's very nice. And I think on the Mac as well. Just to make it a little easier, I think you could also, if you know the magic URL, you could type it into your browser, I think, and it'll mount it on the desktop or do it from, Apple K, I believe if you say mount server.
Apple K will do that. That's correct. Yeah.
From the Finder, if you do an Apple K, and this is one of the kind of cryptic features of OS X, which is, you know, I find kind of annoying, because you say Apple K and it'll say connect to server, and then it asks for the address, but the what you put before that is kind of cryptic sometimes. You can do FTP, you can do HTTP, you can do SMB, which is
Windows,
the Windows protocol, and there's a few others, I'm sure. So using the Apple utility to do that, I think, will make life a lot easier. So I'd give that a shot, but yeah, I'm not aware of a way to do direct FTP.
No, I think they've got that locked down. I don't think that's possible. Yeah. But I do notice that Transmit lists that in their feature set, so might want to give that a try.
Yeah, it's a good. That's been around for a while, and it's an excellent utility.
Yeah,
I'm with you on that.
Yeah.
So.
Hey, I wanted to tell you and everyone about our sponsor this evening, and our sponsor is AudioEngineUSA.com. You've heard us talk about them for a while. You know that they sent both John and I a set of the speakers. They make these A5 desktop speakers, great to use with your computer, your iPod. You could even use them with your DVD player or home stereo if you've got, you know, if you've got a DVD player in the bedroom with your TV, hook these things up, and now you've got real sound in the room, without having to move a receiver and big monster speakers in or anything like that. These things sound great. They go all the way down to 60 hertz, and I think up to 22 kilohertz, which is above the range of human hearing. For $350, mm-hmm. they sound amazing. They're great desktop speakers and a whole lot more. The Audio Engine A5s from AudioEngineUSA.com.
Yep, and actually, my neighbors, I just found out today, I was talking over the fence, and they're moving.
Ah, so maybe...
Seriously.
Really? Because of your A5s?
Well, it could be that, or it could be because they just had a kid and they need a bigger place. Well, I'd like to think it's the speakers.
I think it's the former. I don't think it's anything to do with the kid. Kids, you know, I've got a couple of kids. They don't change anything in your life, let me tell you. If everything's just the same, there's no difference.
They don't need more space. No. Or...
You know, I am going to take this opportunity to go on a little rant about something that changes your life. John and I have talked about this offline a little bit. By offline, I mean not here with you. But at home, we recently moved into the HDTV world. We bought a plasma screen. And, of course, we're TiVo people, but TiVo doesn't yet record in HD. And, you know, it looks fine on the screen with TiVo, but, you know, HD looks a whole lot better. So we called up our local cable company, which is Comcast, and we figured, well, they've got a DVR. How bad could it be, right? We'll get their DVR. We'll use that for, you know, 6 or 8 months until TiVo comes out with their thing. And it may even be sooner than that. You know,
I like your outlook. How bad could it be?
That's right. So we went ahead and got this thing. And, you know, everybody... I'm saying this is like a public service rant because
now, is it a device?
It is a device,
like a TiVo. So you have a physical device with a hard drive. It's not a virtual.
Correct. It's a cable box with a 60 gig hard drive in it. Okay. And it's got dual tuners, which is cool because you can record two things at once. So you know that's nice, and it will record in HD. I think it'll do, you know, 15 hours of HD or something minimal, but at least it does it, and it looks good. That part is enough. However, I like I said, this is a public service rant because there are so many people out there that hear about TiVo, equate, you know, TiVo equals DVR, and then DVR is any piece of junk that the cable companies or anyone else wants to shove down your throat. This Comcast thing is about as much like TiVo as the Fred Flintstone mobile is like a BMW 700 series with a chauffeur. Okay, sure. They're both cars. Yeah, I'll give you that. And then it stops. You know, once you get used to being driven around in the back seat of that cushy BMW, you don't want to put your bare feet on the pavement anymore and run that Fred Flintstone car.
Let me ask you, does it have a remote control with buttons?
Yeah, we use it with our Harmony remote, and that works fine.
Okay,
there's two big problems.
The common thread is that it has a remote that you can use to operate it.
And it is technically a DVR in that it records TV digitally. And it does HD. So, you know, that's a big plus.
And you can watch it later.
Yes.
Okay, so we have a basic feature set. Good.
Yeah, and it'll do the season pass thing like TiVo will. And it'll do, you know, you can tell it I only want to record first run episodes or all that. It's like somebody looked at a list of TiVo's features and said, yeah, okay, let's just get those and put them in here. But the user interface is poop. It's terrible.
Poop?
It's poop.
Wow.
It's terrible. You have to. It's just it unfathomable that someone. What it comes down to is the TiVo engineers clearly use their product. The Comcast engineers or whoever it was that built this software for the Comcast box has never used any DVR, including the one they wrote. And it reboots all the time, and twice now we've had to we've lost everything that it's recorded. So we actually, with our TV, we have two cable boxes, this Comcast DVR-ish kind of thing. And then we have our regular cable box plugged into TiVo. TiVo records everything. The Comcast box only does the HD stuff, but TiVo's backing it up on the standard def side, just in case the Comcast box decides, well, you know, it's obsessed with making us watch live TV, so there you go. If you have a cable company branded DVR, don't think for a second that you have TiVo. And it really is, you know, a good comparison is Windows versus the Mac. Now, it's actually worse than that, okay? Mm-hmm. But it's the same kind of thing, right? Windows does everything that the Mac does, pretty much. I mean, there's hardly any discrepancy in feature parity. But it the user interface, the usability of it is horrendous. But on the surface, you wouldn't notice it. So if you're using a cable company DVR, think about TiVo. And they don't pay me to say this. They don't, you know, we're just raving lunatics.
We just like them.
Yeah.
Their products make me happy, and I think they make you and your family happy.
They make us all
happy. It's done properly.
Yeah, it's
done properly. You know, I think it leads to another thing. We'll wind down the rant here. But yeah. Engineers are not the best people to design.
No, that's true.
Things. They can do it. And this is my reflection working. Where I work and what I do, but engineers are good at certain things, but designing a user experience and doing a UI, they can construct it, but you need someone with a different skill set to do it properly.
That's right.
And I know that, you know, at Apple, they have, you know, human factors engineers and, you know, people like this that know how, don't let the engineers design things.
No.
So maybe that's what happened.
It's exactly what happened. It's clear that's what happened. I would stake everything on it that there's no human interface engineer or human interface professional ever walked into the room and saw this thing. Because if they did, they'd just throw it away and get a TiVo.
They'd run out screaming.
Right. They just go buy a TiVo. They don't even need to scream. Just go get a TiVo. It's done. So we got an email in, and it's tough for me to read this because of the way I'm set up here, but Nick wrote in and said that he's got basically using a Mac Mini and a cinema display in his living room with an Elgato iTV, and that is his television viewing experience. He's basically having the Mac Mini run the Elgato software. And with the little Elgato device, it runs like a TiVo. That's what it does. And I've not used it, so I say like a TiVo very loosely, but it's possible it works, and it's possible it's like the Comcast thing. But anyway, that's not what we're talking about. His question is, he's got two networks in his house. He's got an airport network and an Ethernet network, and he wants to be able to stream things from his other Mac, so he's going Ethernet. And I'm paraphrasing here, Nick, so forgive me if I'm missing some of the details, because, like I said, the way I'm set up, I'm having trouble reading your email. And I can't print in my hotel room for obvious reasons. So his fear is that he's not getting enough bandwidth over the airport connection to sustain streaming a video from another computer to his Mac Mini to his cinema display where he's sitting comfortably on his couch. And he's got a Ethernet connection on the other the other side of the wall, and he's thinking about drilling through. He says, so once I've done that, how do I know whether the Mac is connecting airport or connecting Ethernet? Now, I'm not exactly sure why he would want to be connected twice, but there's, I guess, reasons for that. But the question is, when you've got two network connections going, how do you know which one is taking priority? Do you know the answer to this, John? Or how do you tell it which one you want to take priority?
Beats the hell out of me.
Oh, all right. Hey, I know the answer.
I'm going to let you take this one.
I think I know the answer. If you go to network preferences, system preferences, and choose network, you'll get a list, and it shows you all of your network connections in order. And what
network,
okay. And what you do is you go to up to location and you go to edit locations. No, that's not going to do it. Sorry. Wait a minute. Go to show and go to network port configurations. And then in this list, you can turn on and off what network connections you want active for this particular location. You can have a dial-up location or a home location or whatever. Mm-hmm. And in that list, you in addition to checking things, you can drag them around and change the order. So, for example, what I do when I'm traveling, this is a good example, is I have one connection that I call Ethernet and Airport Full DHCP. So basically, whatever you can get me, anything you can find, all I want to do is get online. And I make sure Ethernet is at the top of that list, and then Airport second, and then a VPN is third because I've got a VPN back at the office that I sometimes connect to. And that's how you make sure. And I've actually tested it. I've connected at my home network, or my office network rather, with both ways, and I can see where the packets are going. And for sure, if you start dragging this stuff around and hit apply, it moves the packets and goes in a different direction. So,
okay, that's good to know. I didn't know, but you observed that you can use multiple.
Yes, in fact, what I do, and this is sort of a geeky tangent, is I assign a static IP, private IP, to my laptop. And that way, all the stuff that I have routing to it will just go to it no matter what, even if I, move around, plug in the house, plug in the office. It's all the same network, even though they're not physically connected. But I assigned the same IP to Ethernet and an Airport. Now, I do get some errors in the console log when it switches around. There's some ARP things that go on, and that's fine. That's to be expected when you've got two devices with the same IP. But the cool thing is I can get a file transfer going, unplug from the Ethernet network, and the file transfer continues. It just magically shifts over to the Airport side of things. Because my IP didn't change, it works just fine. Then I can go back and plug in somewhere else, and as soon as I jack in, it moves back to the Ethernet connection because it's all the same IP. A little bit geeky, but very handy given the right circumstance.
Okay. Very interesting. Yeah, I tend to use locations. I only have a single connection, so I'll have one for my Bluetooth phone, one for my wired, one for wireless. I've never examined the sharing thing. Now, he also asked about a crossover cable.
Yes.
The same thing here.
Okay.
And I think that's pretty much been eliminated with almost every modern machine that has Ethernet. You used to need a magic cable to connect to machines, very
together.
Similar to how you used to have a special cable to link machines via a serial port, depending on whether it was computer to computer or computer to modem or computer to printer and all that. Sometimes you would need a specially wired cable. Based on what I know, all modern Ethernet ports are smart enough to figure out if they're connected to another computer or to a hub or a router. That'll just probe the voltages.
Certainly, all the modern Macs are. I wouldn't go as far to say all modern computers. I've seen some recent Windows machines that don't necessarily do that.
That I've seen, at least the portables, will do the same thing. Because connected Dells to Macs and just pulled out a regular cable, and they'll probe the voltages and they'll figure out, what am I connected to?
Right.
Let me adjust things accordingly. So for the most part, for any modern machine that's not bargain basement, like some vendors that you may have just mentioned, they may be using a less than top of the line Ethernet controller. Though I don't think it costs too much more. So just to toss that in the rain, that you shouldn't at this point with newer machines have to worry about getting a magic cable to get the machines to talk.
We're gonna let Scott Barman wrap a little bit here. He's got some things to say about SMTP authentication that we were discussing last week, and it's a great continuance to the conversation. It's a little bit long for a standard audio comment, but well worth it to get involved here. So we're going to let Scott deliver this for us, and I'm going to get a drink of water because it's dry like a bone in here.
Hello, Dave and John. We're John and Dave, Sam and Harry, whatever. I'm having fun. This is Scott from the Washington, D.C. area. Just to amplify or clarify some things that you spoke about in the last podcast. Regarding the SMTP server, and I keep stumbling over that. I can't tell you how many times I've re-recorded this because I keep stumbling over SMTP. regarding that, you need to check with your ISP, because many ISPs allow for authentication to the SMTP server. So you can give them your username and password. In fact, some ISPs also allow you to do this over SSL, which is a very good idea, especially if you're traveling and using Wi-Fi. So if you're around and somebody like me is around who likes to turn on the antenna and run Ethereal just to see what's coming across the network, you don't have to worry about somebody like me seeing your password.
But you're a nice guy.
As far as the POP service goes, this was something that John said. A POP or authenticated POP, well, POP is automatically authenticated. Under the hood, if you look at the protocol, you have a user and password. You command is user USER or password PASS, and it sends all this in the clear. There is a mechanism that allows you to send an encrypted message, a small encrypted message based on an agreed upon protocol, and I'm not going to get in it because that's way too geeky for a lot of people. But the one thing that it doesn't do is does not send your password in the clear. Your password is a key to that piece of encryption. So if I'm sitting there in a coffee shop sniffing whatever is going around in the air because I like to have fun and laugh at other people, you can send your authentication to your POP server without giving up your password. And I think that's a wonderful thing.
Indeed.
Anyway, I hope you guys have a nice trip next week, and I hope all is well, and I look forward to hearing your next show from the road. And I also want to hear from Dave about his trials and travails with the MacBook Pro.
Next week, next week.
Still holding off. I have my 17-inch PowerBook, and I'm probably going to wait a year before looking at a MacBook Pro. Anyway, good luck. Have a good week, and we'll talk at some point. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Scott.
He actually kind of reminds me of like a Dr. Evil. I'm going to listen to, because, you know, I've done that as well. I don't know how often you do that, but
yeah.
Getting on foreign networks and just, you know, firing up, packet monitor, like Ethereal.
Ethereal.
And, just seeing what's out there. Ethereal. But yeah, he's absolutely right. There is, and actually I tried this with you earlier today, Dave.
Yep.
I use Eudora. What do you use for your primary email?
I'm a MailSmith guy still.
Okay.
Yeah.
So in Eudora, under the settings, there's a sending mail pane.
Okay.
And they do have a checkbox saying allow authorization.
Right.
And they will ask which personality or which account in Eudora speak you want to use. I sent you something, but the thing is, it never prompted me. And when I did try to use it, now probably because I was sending from my normal account, but I just want to see what would happen. When I tried from other accounts, like I do have a WorldNet dial-up account for Extreme Backup, and also my Verizon account through the cell phone, and both of those, when I tried to do this, it never got farther than trying to talk to the Optimum Online mail server. It never got to the point of requesting authorization. Now,
well,
I may have to just spend a little more time to see if it ever gets to the point of prompting or submitting the password, but it sat there for minutes and minutes and days. So I don't know if their mail server is realizing that someone is trying to come from outside and just ignoring that, or if I got to tweak the Eudora settings. So I don't know if you've dabbled with this or you had better results with that.
I typically go the SSL route. It seems like that has sort of replaced the SMTP auth as the default way of getting to a outgoing mail server from remote, from the road, et cetera, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
Typically, I use Gmail, and that seems to work fine most of the time, and I know that AOL now actually has one, too, and you can get a free AOL.com or AIM.com account if you go to, surprisingly enough, AIM.com. And you can get a Gmail account if you just ask us, because they just keep giving us more and more. They replenish our pool, so that's that's where that goes.
And actually, Eudora has a separate, just to follow up on that, if you are a Eudora user, they have a separate SSL pane.
Right.
So these are overlapping things that can provide you with, you know, a little bit of security. Though I'm not sure, to Scott's point, if SSL over these protocols encrypts everything, including the password, I would guess it would.
I'm almost certain that it encrypts the password, yeah.
So I guess that's a better choice. And I have actually, yeah, I think it was with Gmail or one of the services. Yes, I have done SSL. Yeah, I do believe it's checking your Gmail account. They actually, I think, require that, which is a good, I mean,
it's a good, you can't use, you can use regular POP with mm-hmm. Gmail, and it'll let you do it without SSL, I believe. But no, maybe not. Maybe it requires SSL. I know for sending it does, for sure.
Yeah. So a good thing for, because you never know who's watching.
You never know.
Especially like if you're in a hotel.
That's right. So next week we're gonna do this. We'll talk a little bit more about the Intel thing. I'm sure we'll have some listener feedback. I also want to address something, and I'll just throw it out there now, and we can all kind of cogitate it on this week. Wow. And that is the myth that exists out there that DSL is better than a cable modem because the cable modem is a shared network and DSL is a mainline, you know, private network to you. So we'll leave it as we'll leave it at that, and we'll talk about it next week. If you've got anything to chime in on that, send it in to us at macgeekgab@macobserver.com. Of course, you can send anything in there.
Yep. I'd like to get in general feedback from folks. Do you have any cable modem or DSL horror stories or success stories?
Yeah.
Let us know.
Yeah.
I personally, I'm a cable modem fan. I've always had it. I've never had to dabble with DSL. But we'd like to hear from you.
And we are still running the survey for another week and a day, I believe. So that's our podcast listener habits survey. Please take a minute to answer that if you would. We would appreciate it. And for those of you that have answered it, we appreciate it. So, like I said, we've got Gmail invites. You can Skype things into us. The Skype voicemail works just fine. And now with the released version of Audio Hijack Pro with Universal Binary, I can pull things off of Skype, even though Skype isn't Universal Binary yet. And
where's the band?
Oh, the band's
break. You left them back in.
Well, I left the Vamp band on break. That's back on the other computer. But we've got this, you know.
There are.
So 206-666-GEEK is another way to send things into us. Thank you very much.
Podcast Alley, iTunes, please.
Thank you for staying subscribed. Wish me luck on this trip. It's been a crazy one already.
I'm glad that's over.
Good night, John.